Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Jim Ostroff is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, the guys who produce the Kiplinger Letter, which I give you a report on every week and have been doing now for, let's see, I guess we're in our 10th year with them. Yeah, we started doing this in 98, so coming up in May, I think, this next May, will be our 10th anniversary with the Kiplinger folks and talking about what they got to say about what's going on out there in the world. And we one of the guys who does it with us on a semi-regular basis is our good friend Jim Ostroff. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Jim. Always appreciate it.
It's good to have you back, as always. Jim, have you kept up at all with what Congress did this week in terms of the tax bill and some of the other legislation that they passed? Have you kept up with that this week?
We have looked at some of that, and certainly, I mean, I should say that's something that we're going to be reporting on next. But
right.
for instance, with this alternative minimum tax, which was set to snag an additional X million of middle class.
About 22 million, I think. Remember, folks, this is the alternative minimum tax was devised in the late 1960s to tax 150 highly, very, very wealthy people. 150.
Right, that's right.
And so it was never indexed for inflation, meaning it was never intended to go any further than that. And I think in 07 it's going to get 22 million people.
That's right. And Congress basically enacted a little help that will keep this from enlarging much bigger for this calendar year, for this tax year. But beyond that, they just were not able to fix anything. So it's basically they punted down the road, and
yeah,
then they'll fight.
So the AMT, they didn't do any kind of a fix on the AMT.
No. They just helped out a little bit for 1 year, but still, many millions of people who are middle income people will end up paying this alternative minimum tax.
What's it raising? Like $50 billion?
It's that's the problem. It's for them, for Congress. It is an incredible cash cow.
That they never were supposed to have.
No, exactly. It was intended to ensure that a few hundred, at that point, very wealthy individuals paid at least some tax. And
Jim, I like to remind people that even in the 80s,
right,
when this was catching more people, mm-hmm, than they originally intended, the people it was catching were benefiting from some of the loopholes that those original 150 business owners were benefiting from. But in 1986, all those loopholes were taken away. So, folks, for 21 years, the things that alternative minimum tax were designed to fix have not even been available.
No, they haven't. And it just, as we've seen time and again with so many federal programs, they are enacted temporarily to fix a problem or situation. It turns out they raise a lot of money for the federal government, and they become locked in concrete and lose their original intention. Doesn't make a difference, but they provide a lot of income, and so they're retained.
This is the kind of tax, Jim, that taxpayers, if they really stopped and understood, if the 22 million taxpayers who paid AMT this year really understood what was going on and how ridiculous this is, would they be storming Capitol Hill with sickles and axes and sledgehammers and pitchforks? I mean, they'd be putting these guys, they'd be riding Congress out on a rail.
Well, and the thing
is, amazing. It's amazing to me that there hasn't been a revolt about this.
But most people, And even most, there are many, many people out there who just don't, they don't really pay attention as much as they should. I mean, that is it. But it raises scores of billions of dollars, it does. And it, money that could be used by individuals, it's not there. So that's the way it goes. And
thankfully, it looks like Congress finally did get out of town.
They have done a good job. They've gone home for Christmas.
That's the only good thing they've done, really, is just leave town, right?
That may be the lasting accomplishment. I don't know. They did enact some energy legislation, but some other things. But there's a lot of debate, of course, here right now about the Democrats' first year as a majority party, first time in a dozen years that's been the case, and whether or not the Democrats accomplished anything near they had promised. Politicians are wont to promise many things. So,
didn't they? They did fund the troops, though, right? They got that through.
Ultimately, over here, Congress approved, I believe it was $50 billion for the troops without any strings attached.
Right,
and that's it.
In my opinion, that's a loser for the opponents of that. Of that money, you know, whether you like what's going on or not, we got men and women in harm's way. You know, where's the conundrum about whether we're going to fund those guys or not?
Well, and it just ultimately, of course, on that it's politics. And I should say there are
Jim, I'm sorry, but that's what makes me so mad. That's what makes me mad.
Well,
is when we got my son spent two tours in Iraq. When we got people in harm's way over there, politics should be off the darn table.
Well, you know, it used to say over here that in the United States, politics ended, you know, at the shore.
Yeah.
And that was it. And there were no Republicans or Democrats. When it came to doing things like this, you provided for the men and women who protect our country and are literally in harm's way. You know, I'll state as a fact that very, very few members of Congress have any children or relatives.
Yeah.
Even in the military, certainly, even in Iraq, very few. And there are some who have served themselves and do have children.
Fewer and fewer, though.
Very, very, very few. I mean, it's typical of so many things. I mean, and that also members of Congress have lifetime health care.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Hold on to that thought, Jim. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk about how the states are doing. You know, we've been talking about how the economy is doing. How are the states doing with their money, with their revenue in these times? And we'll get Jim to help us with that. That's coming up right after the next break. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend, Jim Ostroff. Jim is Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, let me remind you to check out my website when you get a chance, smallbusinessadvocate.com. I'm very proud of our websites because they're there to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful, and they're free, no charge. We made them since day one. My goal was to make all the information we could available to you without charging you anything to use it and to ask our corporate partners to help me pay for it. And they do. And I hope you'll thank them for that too, by the way. So go to askjim.biz. You can listen to the show a lot of different ways. You can read articles. You can listen to past shows all the way back to 99. You can podcast them, by the way. You can subscribe to my newsletter, which comes every week by email. You can check out our blog, which we update every weekday. And don't forget to check out our knowledge base, askjim.biz. Check that out and use it to your advantage as well. Jim Ostroff, I remember back in 01 and 02 or so, maybe part of 03, we had states that were really hurting for cash. The economy was bad. I remember, Jim, maybe you were here reporting with me part of that time, when some states were near bankruptcy.
Oh, yes, I do recall. Absolutely. And there was concern.
Yeah,
it happened during the Depression, but that's sort of ancient. What would happen if a state could not meet its obligations.
Exactly. And some states basically got to that point.
Right.
And so then, Jim, things got better. And I remember not more than a year or so ago reporting with you and Joan that through what you guys reported in the Kiplinger letter, that the states were flush with cash. They had cash coming out of their ears.
That's
Jim,
right.
Why didn't they lay that money back for a rainy day? Because now they're out of cash again.
Welcome to government. No, it's absolutely true. Absolutely true. And a few, some did. I mean, some have been very responsible in that way. But for most, it's just we're flush with cash. Use the cash. Use the money. And tomorrow is another day. The other day has come very quickly. And they go, holy Toledo, whatever, we're out of money again. And so, again, it's like so many things. We talked about that AMT. And really, it's alternative minimum tax. The alternative minimum tax that Congress effectively did not really fix again this year because it's a cash cow, and it becomes the the dollar drug, really, and they get hooked on it. Now the same thing here in a way. I mean, it's not black and white, but states then look to selling off things, privatizing various resources like roads. But the thing is, and there really are some good reasons to consider it, but for many, they just say, quick cash, press button A, and there we go. And I should say that is the concern, that there may be some states that look here for easy money and don't really figure out what needs to be done. Yes, as we know, that private business can do things better than government. No question about it. And there are states and governors and legislatures that recognize that. But on the other hand, you can't just say, okay, write me that check, give me the money, and, we'll talk to you 99 years from now, which is the duration of many of these.
Well, now, some of the states, you guys are reporting this week that some states are trying to improve their efficiency and their cash management by using private firms for a lot of the services.
Well,
tell us about that.
Well, they are. I mean, for instance, you have North Carolina, which is going to allow private companies to manage state liquor stores. In Boston and Kansas City, New York City, and I should say Kansas City, Missouri, you have basically businesses that are basically maintaining various city parks. It goes on. You get Illinois, Massachusetts, and Texas. It's likely that businesses will be running the state lotteries, and others are looking at privatizing public vehicle maintenance and prisons.
Schools? Did you mention the school situation?
And schools. And schools.
How about that?
Some concern about that. And
Philadelphia had to have their schools taken away from them.
That's right. They did.
And they privatized them. With some success, I think.
And the thing is, I think over the years Kiplinger's demonstrated that private business can operate, businesses can operate enterprises more economically and you might say better overall than government, because government is not set up. It's a different animal. They cannot do it.
Government
very well.
Breeds mediocrity.
Well,
government does not breed excellence.
Right, right, right.
The marketplace with all the competition. And the furnace, of the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
All the heat and the pressure creates excellence.
Mm-hmm. It does, and
efficiencies.
Right, it does. The only concern here, again, like anything, if you just give somebody carte blanche, and in many cases, for nearly a century. You have to ensure in some way there's some accountability, oversight, and ability to get out of a contract if even that company, for other reasons, is failing, failing going out of business. And the concern is that in some cases states have been so quick to say, give me the money, that they haven't really done enough to ensure that problems don't arise in the future.
Well, and that's the one. You know how you fix that? You give a contract to two companies. You don't let one company have the whole state. You split it up.
That's right.
And in the marketplace, we call it a blanket order. We'll talk about that a little bit and some other issues that Kiplinger points out this week after these messages. 29 after, Jim Osterhoff is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm your host.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for staying with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. Jim Osterhoff is our guest. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, as a little bit of an aside, today, on this day in 1946, the very first showing of Frank Capra's movie, It's a Wonderful Life, was shown in New York City.
I knew it would. Then it would be a flash in the pan.
And you know what, Jim? I don't even want to think about what the world would look like without Jim Osterhoff.
Oh, me too. What would it be like?
It's a scary thought to imagine what would happen if we didn't have Jim Osterhoff.
We'll be living in Pottersville.
So, Jim, in this holiday season, I'm thankful you're here.
I thank you. You have me.
Somebody I bet you're glad about that, too, aren't you?
Yeah, all things considered, I'm very happy to be here and be here with you and the listeners. Yes.
You know, Jim, I was talking, just to wrap up quickly on the thought we had a minute ago about privatizing, for the states to do privatization of certain services, like roads and schools and prisons, things like that. One of the things that the states could do that you know, a lot of industries, instead of giving an exclusive contract to one company, they'll do something like what they call a blanket order.
That's correct.
And what that means is that, okay, out of the 100 vendor choices that I have for this to buy steel rebar or concrete or wiring or whatever it might be, out of the 100 vendors I can choose from, you two guys right here, you three guys have won the bid to provide me with products and services, privatizing whatever, and so you guys are going to compete among yourselves for this.
That's right.
And I'm gonna do business with all three of you sometime during the year. That's a very oversimplified way of talking about how the states could work this out, but that's one way to do it. And that way, no one company can. Because, as you know, Jim, one company gets all the bid for a state, they become a bureaucracy.
That's what happens, and again, and that's why, for things other than running a highway building a highway and running it, you know, states often do prefer to have to really divvy up the work, just to ensure the quality is there, and also that the contractor doesn't become lax and basically say, "I have it made." You know, I have another 80 years to go on this contract. The big concern on this, in some cases, is that these very long-term contracts have been let with little effective oversight, it's felt, and human nature being what it is, and just the duration. There's concern that quality may suffer. But we're working it out. Bottom line, generally here, is that businesses can do these things more efficiently at less cost to taxpayers.
Jim, moving on to page two, Sarbanes-Oxley, which was an ill-advised law that's wreaked havoc on the marketplace, especially public companies, but especially small businesses that want to become public. It's really messed up that whole opportunity for those guys. Mm-hmm. But there's some news there that you guys report this week on a little bit of help for small firms that either are public or want to go public. What is that? What's the news?
And basically here, I mean, it's so-called, we're a reprieve from the Securities and Exchange Commission. You know, there's basically another delay, another maybe year or so, in some new accounting rules that will implement other provisions of Sarbanes-Oxley. It'll be at least until 2009, so it's now in case another year. So that in this case is beneficial. The SEC is going to study basically the cost and benefits of a regulation, you know, that would apply basically to, you know, public companies with market capitalization less than $75 million. That means small businesses.
Most companies with that kind of market cap they're likely to be on the pink sheet on the over-the-counter level,
right,
aren't they? They're not likely to be on one of the big boards.
No, that is correct. But there are benefits.
And here's the thing, Jim. I know some companies who fit this bill.
Right.
Actually, folks, if you think this is some esoteric thing, I know people that this will benefit.
That's right. No, that's right. And just in essence, really closely help them reduce the high cost of complying with Sarbanes-Oxley.
That's exactly right. This
so is
the ridiculous
public.
Thing. We got more to come, folks. We got a lot more good stuff to come. Some outstanding nuggets of information from our good friends at Kiplinger, especially from our good friend Jim Ostroff. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. We'll be right back. We used to be so happy. High on a mountain of love. Night after night I've been standing. Marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. Mr. Van Morrison, ladies and gentlemen.
Fabulous night to make romance. Need the cover of a
tour. Arguably his best song, Moon Dance. Arguably one of the best songs of all time. I like that one. By the way, folks, if you go to Starbucks, like I did yesterday, when I spent the day with my daughter yesterday, and I know you're all excited to hear about that, but I have to take her to Starbucks, and so while I was there, Starbucks has Van Morrison's Greatest Hits. So if you go to Starbucks today, go buy it. It's absolutely outstanding. Recording and CD, and by the way, one of the cuts on that there's two cuts on there when Morrison was the lead singer of the group called Them, THEM, that's right. And I'm not going to say how far back that was, but you'd be surprised to find out that he was the lead singer there. Somebody else who appreciates Van Morrison is our good friend Jim Ostroff, and he's kind of my era, aren't you, Jim?
Yes.
But you know, Van's still wailing. He's still out there knocking it out.
He still is.
These years, his voice is still strong and
very good.
I like his stuff. Hey Jim, yeah. I like telling the audience about Kiplinger's website because it's a good one. Kiplinger.com. Folks, I encourage you to go there and check it out. Use it to your advantage. A lot of free stuff. If you want more, they'll let you subscribe to their publications, and you get with the publication subscription, you get access to all the stuff way back in the back of their website to help you as you're doing business planning, as you're getting ready for the new year, as you're trying to understand maybe more about a certain industry or maybe some of the public policy stuff that's going on. You want to read more about this, you can do that if you subscribe, especially. And you can do it right there at Kiplinger.com. And, of course, they've got the four letters that go out every month, the weekly Kiplinger letter, the three biweeklies, the California, the tax, and the agriculture letter. Those are the three that come out every other week. And then they got a magazine. Jim, tell us about the magazine.
Well, it's Kiplinger Personal Finance, which is the first, and we think the best, you know, personal finance magazine. And I should say, it, as well as everything else, it was on our website, as you mentioned, and most of it is free.
There's and Jim, I think it's coming up on a 60th anniversary, isn't it?
Let's see.
Late 40s, 48 or 9, I think.
The magazine was founded in 1948, so it's
next year's 60th anniversary. How about that?
That's right. It is turning that.
And Kiplinger Letter just celebrated the 84th anniversary.
Right, and it very soon will, beginning next year, 85
that'll be in September, yeah. And now give us that phone number, Jim.
Yeah, there's a toll-free subscription number, and that is 800-544-0155.
Jim, another thing that you guys report in the terms of small businesses trying to go public and trying to maintain their public status is something called more and more people are using a reverse merger.
Right.
And I have a friend who just did this. He has a technology company, and he's in Texas. And he just in about the last 2 months, he did a reverse merger, and now you can buy his stock on the over the counter on the pink sheet.
That's right. It's very helpful.
Tell us about how this works.
Businesses. I mean, basically, if your company let's see, it basically merges. In many cases, there are.
It's an existing shell public shell company, isn't it?
That's right, an existing public shell company, and in doing that, that gives, you know, say a small business or any business, but immediate, but particularly for small business, immediate ability to go public. They are then public, with all the, you know, the benefits accruing to that in terms of being able to raise capital.
If you tried to start your own business, if you try to take your business public, it's quite a long process to go through all the auditing and all the different steps that you got to go through. It costs you a lot of money, and it could take quite some time. It could take months and months and months, maybe a year or two, maybe even more, depending on much cash you have and how long it takes. But with a reverse merger, there's a shell public company out there that's just sitting there.
Right.
Probably, Jim, many times with no activity, no sales. Somebody just took the company public. They just created a public company, which you can do. And there are people, Jim, who've done this for the purpose of selling it, basically, to somebody.
Well,
and so what you do is you merge your existing company with revenue into this shell company, and you know, bada bing, bada bang, you got a public company with revenue.
That's right. Which
it happens a lot quicker, and maybe a lot less expensively.
Well, that's the point. If you really need to do that, here's an option. Many more are doing that because it's much easier and it's quicker. It's quicker and gives you ability to access the public capital in that sense quicker, be in the public markets more quickly.
So, folks, if you're thinking about going public, ask somebody, ask a securities expert about a reverse merger option. It's not for everybody, but it does work. Jim, let's move down and talk about the health reimbursement arrangement, HRAs. Tell us how this works.
Well, you know, they're becoming, you know, now a lot more popular with companies and employees. It's an alternative to the way, you know, healthcare programs have been set up for retirees. And unlike, you know, there have been this health savings accounts, the HRAs, that where employers fund that entirely, and actually contributions and all these things are tax-free if they use the health expenses. But, you know, firms want to, the HRAs are funded by the employers, and they're tax-free if you, you know, they use for health expenses.
Right.
But firms like them because they don't have to fund them until the withdrawals are actually requested.
Right.
So it gives us more flexibility for the workers, too.
It sounds to me like it's a lot better cash management, too.
It is.
Ask about HRAs, folks. Talk to your advisors about HRAs and see if it's a good thing for you. Quick break, 10 till, right back with Jim Ostroff. Stay with us. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, one of the things you guys report again on this week is the water issue.
That's right.
And way back years ago, I mean, one of the first things that we talked about when I started covering the Kiplinger Letter back in 98 was what you guys predicted would be water wars.
That's right.
Kiplinger was way out front on this years ago. And, you know, there's subsequently there's been a water war between Virginia and Maryland, a water war between Florida and Alabama, a water war between Florida and Georgia, a water war between Georgia and Alabama, and out west in California, Arizona, and Colorado, and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And Jim, the urban sprawl has just about maxed out the water issue in a lot of places, hasn't it?
Well, it has, and, you know, the thing is, they say, is like land, you know, they don't make any more of it, so you have more people competing for the same amount of resource, which in fact, may be even less. I'll put it this way, global warming or not, I mean, there has been a reduction in snow cover on many, many mountains in this country, and snowfall has become less reliable over the last, say, 20 years or so. So the issue is you have more, even more people, even for homes, needing water. There's a finite supply, and particularly, for instance, we well know this year, Atlanta has been having a water shortage for many years.
You know, Jim, it irritates me, though, when people blame water shortages on global warming. Jim, we've had droughts as long as, in my life, I've lived through several droughts months long and maybe more than months long. And the thing is when you're sucking the water out of your tributaries to supply houses and buildings as Atlanta becomes basically the state of Georgia almost, that kind of growth.
Right. Absolutely.
Don't blame it on global warming when you're sucking the water out for all this other stuff. When we had the drought in the 30s that basically devastated Oklahoma and the breadbasket.
That's right.
You know, Atlanta didn't have any problem with water. You know why? Because it was a little bitty town.
That's right. Oh, and the same, I'll say with Los Angeles here, now having ongoing problems with getting enough water, it continues to sprawl. And the fact is that basically water assessments, water rights, all the key things about water were laid out really in the 1920s using data for the best they had for the previous 50 years, which it turned out were the wettest 50-ish years in the last 500.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened like that. So, but the fact is that there really, water is becoming more of an issue, and it is a critical thing. It is vital to life and health, and basically this, governments have to figure out, and people and individuals and companies, how to deal with this, how to conserve more, how to not waste water, just throw it out. And the bottom line, of course, is that you have our legislators in Washington, lawmakers saying, we're not going to do anything. There has to be a disaster.
Well, but
no
the
disaster,
thing,
we don't
but,
have
but Jim, it's got to be a planning thing, some kind of a development planning going on. Water has got to be, the major thing. In fact, for a while out in Phoenix, there was a moratorium on building because they didn't have enough water for the new properties.
Exactly.
So anyway, that's a big issue. It's going to continue to be out there. We're going to have to watch it. It could impact your business in the future, folks. Jim, let's move over and talk a little bit about. As we go into the election, about right after you and I are on the show the next time on the 1st of January, a few days after that, we're going to have the first what is really not a primary, but it's like a primary, and that's the Iowa caucuses.
That's right.
And the election, I'm predicting, Jim, this is going to be the most interesting presidential election of my lifetime.
I tend to think you are correct. And nobody can say how this is going to turn out right now. You have various front runners, but they really don't have a lock on anything. A little this or that in Iowa or New Hampshire or one of the many other states early on could really determine who will be the nominees.
No, I'm actually glad nobody has become anointed by now, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, absolutely, and it is just no good, in my opinion, to have the candidates locked in, known, and all, almost a year in advance.
I want them to earn their if they win it. I want them to earn it. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Happy to help. Thank
you. I won't see you before the New Year's, so Happy New Year. Until then.
Thank you.
See you next time, Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes. Small business owners, this is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.